From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The U.S. Supreme Court has overturned the constitutional right to an abortion. The decision reverses Roe v. Wade, the court's landmark five-decade-old ruling that guaranteed a person's right to obtain an abortion.
Here we are, exactly at the point many of us feared and even predicted. If they can take away your ability to control your own body, there's not much that stops them from making marriage equality illegal and taking away employment protections for your beliefs or your orientation. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. We are headed down a dangerous spiral that will erode our democracy.
Mr. President, you've seemed to got your pulse on state matters. Among the Republicans running, which do you think is going to pose the greatest challenge to the Democratic incumbent governor, J.B. Pritzker?
Well, it would look like Bailey. I haven't made an endorsement, but he's doing a good job. A lot of people are liking him. And I think that, you know, he would potentially have a shot.
And there's plenty to talk about this week on State Week. The primary election just days away. Former President Donald Trump, he's coming to Illinois. And the U.S. Supreme Court, as expected, delivering a decision that ends the constitutional right to an abortion. We'll discuss that and more on this episode of State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. Anna Meisel is with us. She's NPR Illinois State House editor. And joining us today, we have the Chicago Tribune political reporter Rick Pearson. Rick, it's always good to have you on with us.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
Well, let's first talk about the court opinion. It overturns Roe versus Wade. And I guess a lot of people that are listening to this show might be wondering just what impact is that going to have here in Illinois? And Hannah, fill us in on what's the latest.
Well, for the interim, it's not going to mean much. Democrats in the General Assembly have, you know, done their utmost to basically prepare for, you know, what back in 2017 seemed kind of like a very odd proposal that, you know, Roe v. Wade would be overturned, but in the end they were proved right. And so, you know, three separate packages of legislation in 2017 and 2019 and this past fall in 2021 strengthened Illinois' abortion access laws for the time being. This decision does not mean much, but legally at least, you know, Illinois is going to be basically an island in the Midwest, along with Minnesota. Demand for abortion from non-Illinois residents, we've already seen gone way up in the last few years, and that demand is just going to increase. And abortion providers, you know, they have done what they can to expand their capacity, but we've heard from those providers that they worry that it's not enough, that they we're not able to expand fast enough. And this is a very technical months-long process involving everything from regulation to being able to hire enough people. And it's not a snap your fingers thing. You know, the risk that they say is that wait times for both Illinois residents and non-residents will increase. We saw this morning, folks like Mike Pence call for a nationwide abortion ban. And that is something that is kind of looming, you know, beyond in a post-Roe world. I mean, things could go a lot of different ways. And if there is indeed a nationwide abortion ban, you know, that could very well happen. And Illinois would not be, you know, insulated. And then beyond that, we also saw in Justice Clarence Thomas's separate opinion, you know, agreeing with the majority, but he wanted to go further. And he said that the court should probably in the future examine with fresh eyes, given this precedent that they're giving today, you know, rulings like same-sex marriage and access to contraception. In Illinois, the immediacy is felt because, you know, in Illinois, Democrats have the power and they can actually do something. So this morning, obviously, as we heard, the governor is calling for a special session, and he's supported in that by the leaders of both chambers of the General Assembly.
So Brick, fill me in on this. Then the governor wants to have a special session to deal with abortion rights and more protections. What exactly do we know what he's going to be calling for?
Well, we do know that there are some pending things that didn't get accomplished in the last session. And one of those was basically kind of a hold harmless for doctors, out-of-state doctors and out-of-state patients who come to Illinois and undergo or perform an abortion where their states might put them in kind of a legal jeopardy, that this would be kind of an Illinois indemnification for those people and to practice abortions as well as to obtain abortions in Illinois. That's one thing. Hannah touched on the other thing. You've got the providers are really going to be putting on a big push to try to obtain funding, change regulations to allow more expanded access to abortion given the expected influx of patients coming to Illinois. So that's going to be a significant issue. We've already kind of seen that from the abortion rights lobby, that they want those changes. I think really, even though we kind of knew this was coming from the leaked ruling that came out, it's a whole different matter when it actually becomes the law of the land. And so I think any special session could be virtually wide open when it comes to ideas and concepts to more firmly establish what's already enshrined in Illinois law, which is a woman's right to have an abortion.
Charlie, could Democrats possibly go too far here? Because I've seen polling out there and, different polls tell different stories, but some have said that majority of people, while they favor a woman's right to have an abortion, they do want some limitations. Could we be seeing that maybe this pendulum is swinging a little too much here in Illinois, that Democrats could pay a price for that?
My suspicion would be the chance is there, but I don't think it's very likely, in that, as we discussed earlier, the Supreme Court decision includes the possibility of reversing a lot of the what we call progressive legislation, for example, dealing with contraception, for example, dealing with same-sex marriage, stuff where Illinois has been kind of in the forefront. And I don't think that what we've done so far and the things that are being discussed, for example, helping to provide additional money for these clinics to boost their security, to help pay travel expenses, to help pay other costs. I don't think that's going to be going too far as things stand now. What it is, it's basically saying, okay, the Supreme Court has decided to throw out half a century's worth of precedent and allow states to follow the outline in The Handmaid's Tale, but we're not going to do it. And so we've already said that we're going to maintain a woman's right. And what we'll be doing in the special session is just figuring out ways that we can make sure that it's preserved. And the thing that I think we need to pay attention to, as Hannah mentioned, what would happen if there were a national ban on abortion? What would happen in Illinois in that case? Presumably, to provide an abortion would be a federal offense. Who's going to prosecute it? Will U.S. attorneys in Illinois, in the Northern District of Illinois, for example, prosecute a woman for getting an abortion or a doctor for providing one? I mean, those, in my mind, those are all open questions. And I think, as Governor Pritzker said, this is for people who believe in personal freedom, this is sort of a dark day. And as somebody else said, it's interesting, a week ago, the court was all in favor of rights for guns, but today they've said, we don't believe in rights for women.
Now, Rick, this happens, this decision coming down just days before the primary election. It may not have a big impact in the primaries because it seems like candidates, partisan-wise, are pretty much on the same side with this. If it's Democrats or Republicans, they seem to be sort of on the same page. But going into the general election, both here and really across the country, do you expect this to have a major impact?
I do. I mean, I think it's particularly one. We always talk all the time about the key in Illinois of the key swing voters of those suburban women who are socially moderate, made fiscal conservative, and how it plays into virtually every issue, you know, crime, education, whatever. But given the fact that, you know, here again, we proof that elections have consequences. When you have a 50-year precedent overturned by this court, I think that is going to play a factor in that key swing vote. Plus, there's no doubt that, one, this does energize the Republican base voter in the state. But having said that, they're still outnumbered by Democrats. And certainly Democrats will be using this as a rallying cry all the way up through the next presidential election.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson. Hannah, let's move into the election discussion. Just days to go before the primary is complete. We've seen some more polling out there that seems to give Darren Bailey quite a bit of an edge in the Republican nomination race for the Republican nomination for governor. Jesse Sullivan, at least from what we're hearing, saying that he's making some moves as well. What do we know going, you know, just days away?
Yeah, it was, you know, only 2 weeks ago this Friday that that WBEZ and Sun-Times poll was released showing Darren Bailey, you know, kind of surging ahead of Richard Irvin. And now, you know, according to this latest poll that we're seeing, Richard Irvin has been left behind the dust in third place. Darren Bailey solidly in the lead with, you know, Jesse Sullivan. His campaign obviously wants to claim that he's surging. This has been such an interesting race to watch, you know, because of this. This factor of the undecided voters is, you know, something in every race. But I think the way that this has evolved, I think it's left a lot of room for surprises. You know, I think Donald Trump coming to Illinois to have a rally with Mary Miller, as we discussed last week. You know, the potential of a Trump endorsement, which Bailey has been hinting at for weeks and weeks and weeks. You know, I think that could really seal the deal for him. But it's just been a very interesting race. But, you know, all along, obviously, this is what J.B. Pritzker wanted to be the most uncharitable. You could say that Darren Bailey is kind of this caricature of what folks in Chicago think of downstate. And I'm not saying this is a blanket statement. This is, you know, Darren Bailey is this guy from, you know, Southeast Illinois. And he makes no bones about really eschewing this kind of elitism. This is kind of the binary setup that J.B. Pritzker wants, especially, you know, if he is, and I don't really want to lean into this too much, but like if he is setting up for himself some sort of run for president, or at least, you know, this as a trial balloon, this is kind of the image that he wants to portray, that he is the serious one. You know, and, you know, Darren Bailey being his foil would be the best thing for him, I guess. But, you know, I feel like we've danced around it for weeks, but we've never fully confronted whether the spending from the Democratic Governors Association to boost Darren Bailey, you know, funded through J.B. Pritzker's campaign is, you know, actually good for democracy.
Charlie, your thoughts on that? I've got to think that it has probably helped Bailey, maybe Sullivan as well.
Yeah, I'm sure it's helped Bailey, but I see absolutely no problem with it because none of the messages that Pritzker and his allies put out affecting the Republican primary were factually untrue. They said they alleged that Bailey is too conservative, and they cited Bailey's own positions. And arguably, if everything plays out the way it's going to, we'll find out come November that, yeah, Bailey is too conservative. On the other hand, it was Irvin's campaign who tried to portray Bailey as some kind of a closet Democrat, which was a flat out lie. I don't see any problem with Pritzker trying to define a likely opponent, particularly when it's factual. And so I think this is all part of the game. And particularly when you're dealing with another campaign that is based on half-truths, misstatements, waffling positions. That's one thing you can say about Darren Bailey. He is not a waffler. He comes out and says just what he thinks. Now, he portrays himself as being this kind of aw shucks down home type guy. He's a very wealthy farmer. He gets federal subsidies. He's had situations where he's had people working on his farms following federal guidelines, having to wear masks, stuff like that. But he's also, I think, a lot more genuine than Richard Irvin in terms of his campaign presence. I think part of Richard Irvin's problem is that he had a long record of portraying himself as a moderate, which I think his handlers saw as being a virtue going into a general election. The difficulty is that's not the image, I don't think, that's going to play in a Republican primary in Illinois these days. And Rick, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but my sense is that the Republican electorate, the Republican base, is a lot farther to the right than it was back in the days of Jim Thompson and Jim Edgar.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, quite frankly, the field of Republican candidates now and the positioning that Irvin's people tried to do are reflective of the fact of how that rightward progression has occurred in the Republican Party. And you, Charlie, you make a very good point too about Irvin, you know, that inability to answer questions. And in fact, if you remember, before the Roe ruling came out, he dodged the question of whether he believed, as he calls himself, pro-life, whether Roe v. Wade should be overturned. He wouldn't answer that question. Well, so I asked it today, now that we have the ruling. He's still dodging it. He said, well, I would, my focus would be on restoring parental notification. But he said, given the Democratic majority in the legislature, the court ruling doesn't have an effect in Illinois. That's his statement.
Well, Rick,
not what you would expect from somebody that's trying to promote a pro-life positioning.
Well, Rick, as somebody that won't be parsing words, as Donald Trump, the former president's coming to Illinois. He's going to be here over the weekend. We mentioned that earlier in Adams County, and he's going to be there at a rally primarily for Mary Miller, congressional candidate, who's also considered pretty far right. Then also Darren Bailey. You know, he touched a little bit on Bailey without giving an endorsement at the start of the show. But your thoughts on Trump coming? What impact does that have?
Well, I think certainly it is a definite boost for Mary Miller. It's been a very hard fought campaign down there. And, you know, you have Mary Miller, who she won't talk to the press, issues goofy statements, has held positions like Hitler was right about one thing and about indoctrinating youth, and really communicates largely through commercials, through social media, but really has not much to show for her one term in Congress. And while, you know, given that, the people that she's allied with, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the House Freedom Caucus in Washington, more of the far right elements of the Republican Party in Washington, she's a perfect person to be endorsed by Donald Trump. So, you know, even though you know, we're talking about the Adams County Fairgrounds outside of Quincy and maybe being a remote location. It's a Donald Trump rally. It's going to get plenty of coverage, and it's going to exceed beyond the 15th congressional district. And I think really the thing to look out for here is, as Hannah kind of alluded to, is there going to be a Darren Bailey endorsement?
Well, Hannah, just a couple of minutes here left, but Donald Trump's coming to Illinois. Ken Griffin's leaving. Ken Griffin gets mentioned in a lot of political circles because he gives a lot to candidates, including Richard Ervin. In fact, he's pretty much bankrolled Ervin's campaign, but now he's announced he's moving, and also his companies related to the Citadel Hedge Fund, they're moving to Florida, and he's going to pull out of Chicago. Give us your thoughts on this whole move. I mean, it looks bad for Ervin right before the primary, just because Ervin's big backer is Griffin.
The writing was on the wall. And also, this is something that Griffin has hinted at and threatened many times before. You know, obviously, this has been in the works, and Ken Griffin already has a home in Florida. And what I think is interesting is this is a GOP Rorschach test. You know, I was listening to the AM 560, the conservative station in Chicago. They had a gubernatorial debate among the Republican candidates, except for Richard Ervin and Max Solomon were not there. This was one of the first questions that came up, and the candidates railed against taxes and regulation. Paul Schimpf, kind of Boy Scout that he is, said, well, you know, what Ken Griffin actually said was that he was moving Citadel because of, you know, the crime in Chicago, which, you know, this has been the focus of the Ervin campaign. And yes, for a while there, this was a very potent issue, but it was very interesting that the Ervin campaign couldn't seem to move past it, couldn't seem to see that, you know, the public was moving on to other things. Kind of a loss for him because he does have a compelling story. And maybe if he had just been more of himself, he could have sold himself to more voters, but it didn't work out that way. And you do have to wonder, you know, how much of a thumb on the scale Ken Griffin had when it came to pushing this crime issue, which ultimately was not a winner among the GOP electorate.
Yeah, just a minute here, Rick, but I'll give you the last word on this. Well, we look at this politically, and a lot of Democrats are saying, you know, so long, Ken. This is still a loss for the city of Chicago and for the state of Illinois when it comes to the jobs and when it comes to his philanthropic efforts, things of that nature.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if you separate the politics from his civic contributions, you know, over $600 million, efforts to deal with crime in some instances by funding high education police academies. But the thing is that Griffin didn't separate himself from the politics. And so when you've put in, you know, nearly $200 million in largely Republican campaigns since 2002, since you've made this investment of $50 million in Richard Ervin, tens of millions he spent to defeat Pritzker's progressive income tax system, the money he's put into Supreme Court races, he's a political player. And so, yes, while there is a great civic loss here, I think there's a bigger loss to be said for the Republican Party and Republican candidates in Illinois, because he was supposed to be the guy to help him counter Pritzker's wealth. And I'm not so sure that with the lacking his business ties back to Chicago, that he's going to share that same kind of concern about helping Illinois Republicans in the future.
All right. Let's go to our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, the last couple of weeks, we've talked about new additions to the official list of state symbols. Dulles Stone as the official state rock, and then last week the Eastern Milk Snake as the official state snake. Now this week there's a different twist. The newest addition to the ranks of the state wildlife is the Kopi. Illinois officials and partner organizations kicked off a campaign this week to rechristen as Kopi four carp species known collectively as Asian carp. The idea is to make them more attractive to U.S. consumers. Asian carp, the big head, silver, grass, and black carp, they're very high in heart-healthy omega-3 fatty acids and low in mercury, according to the officials. So the idea is that we'll get people interested in eating these kopi, which is an abbreviation of the word copious, because there's so many of them, and maybe we'll be able to harvest 20 million to 50 million pounds of them out of the Illinois River annually.
Okay. Hannah.
Former State Senator Tom Cullerton this week was sentenced to a year in prison after pleading guilty to nearly $250,000 in embezzlement from the Teamsters during his first few years in office, 2013, 2016. And, you know, it every case is different and it has to be viewed within its own specific facts. But I don't know, I just found it interesting that, you know, the judge in this case really seemed to struggle with giving him a year. Cullerton wanted probation, the feds wanted 18 months. And it's kind of, it's a much different outcome than what we saw for former state representative Louis Arroyo, who was sentenced to 4 years in prison earlier this year.
Okay. And Rick.
First, I want to join Charlie for some of that fish, okay? My next trip to Springfield. But he has to eat it first, okay?
Well, I've eaten some strange things in my life, but I've never had kopi.
Well, we'll try it together.
All right.
So my quick note from the field is I think everybody ought to take a look at who becomes the Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate on Tuesday to challenge Tammy Duckworth. Now, of course, we've seen races like this in the past where the Democrat is viewed as just virtually unbeatable. So that becomes a little bit of a ladder climbing or self-ego fulfilling effort by these candidates to run. It's very strange. One, you have Kathy Salvey, the wife of Al Salvey, who was a former legislator and unsuccessful candidate for the U.S. Senate, is viewed as the moderate in this one, given that Salvey was always kind of extreme. Al Salvey was always kind of extreme. But if she's the moderate, you have a whole cast of characters here. You have Peggy Hubbard, who is an internet conspiracy theory spreader, who at one point in a previous run for office claimed that the Electoral College was created so that big states like Texas and California and Florida couldn't elect one of their own people as president. Well, of course, the Electoral College was put in place long before those places were even part of the United States. And it kind of contradicts the fact that the Electoral College means larger states, you get more votes. So she's already, is what she bills herself, a self-styled historian. You also have another guy who is has had associations with QAnon and also was active in the efforts to try to overturn the results of the Arizona presidential counting, even though audits showed these claims of fraud were baseless, like President Trump talks about.
Okay, well, we'll talk about election results next week. That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Rick Pearson with the Chicago Tribune. You can get a podcast of our show by going to nprillinois.org through the NPR One app or iTunes. Just look for State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.